But it was an exciting time, and we got into the business of making single crystal by zone refining. And we bought these zone refiners from Germany, had to teach young farm boys off the farm to run these things. But, you know, some of them were really fine operators because farm boys understands more about machinery than the average person. And we had great success with that. Then we had to learn to polish the darn crystal, cut them and polish them, and it got to be quite a real mess. So long about 68, I was asked to run a new projects business, and they replaced me with a man who was a fellow that they'd picked up from west of here, that had made the body for the special Mustang. At any rate, he was an expert in plant operations. So one of his first moves was to stop all crystal growing and get us out of the single crystal business, out of the slice business, and concentrate solely on the polycrystalline business, which was probably a good move, but we had to scrap a lot of equipment and sell a lot of equipment for junk. In fact, I can remember one of the stories that went around was that they were selling these zone refiners that cost us $50,000 a piece or something like that, and some woman bought one for $25 for her husband. And we asked her what he was going to do with it, and she said she didn't know, but he thought he liked equipment. So, you know, it's sort of ridiculous, but the plant has moved ahead down there now and has gone into wholly new ways of making silicon, and they've speeded up the process and improved the process. We actually we used hydrogen, of course, as the carrier, and we used it out of cylinders for a time, but that wasn't going to work, we could see. We bought a Lurgy cell from Germany, and that was a great big electrolytic cell that gave us hydrogen and oxygen, and for a time that was okay, and we'd charge that into a field of tanks at the back. But then that was going to be too little. We could see that we were growing faster than that needed. So finally, along about this time, the aerospace project came up with liquid hydrogen. And so now we could buy liquid hydrogen. So from that point on, we installed a cryostat ball down at Hemlock. And we've been using liquid hydrogen ever since. However, even after that, we went on to the process of cleaning up the hydrogen and recycling it so that we wouldn't have to use all new stuff, because that was pretty expensive. So we had an engineering firm design the condensers and all the pressure equipment to make it possible to condense out everything out of that stream and keep the hydrogen clean and feed it back to the process. And this was quite a step, because purity is so important, but if you recycle something and you've got an impurity in it, boy, you're in real trouble. But now they do recycle, and it is much better, and they've got higher yields and faster turnaround. One of the big uses, we were the largest user of electricity in about a 4-county area down there, because they had to install extra lines and bring in more power packs, and because we were using current like it was going out of style. But now they do the same thing with less current. It's more efficient. The the unit that's making silicon for the company now has been set aside as a wholly owned subsidiary. However, it was wholly owned only for a short time. Two Japanese firms bought partial ownership now, so we have two Japanese partners in that thing, and they buy from us. But this is one of the outstanding efforts at making silicon in the world. It's really a big operation now. They turn it out with a ton.
Goodness. You mentioned in 72 you then went to this new products business.
Oh, 68 actually.
I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong date. Yes, 68.
New projects business. Well, what they wanted to do was formalize under a business structure turning ideas that had been floating around the company for a long time into new business efforts. And one of our first efforts along that line was to take what had been worked on but had not been really developed, was the formation of a so-called foam-filled tire. We developed a process to fill a tire with a foam and then drive on it and not have any air in the tire at all. And we had cars going back and forth to Detroit regularly that had no air in them, just foam. Originally it was a silicone foam, and then we learned that we could make the right combination of other polymers and get the same hysteresis curve and therefore the lack of buildup of heat. And so we developed processes and got patents on it. So we started to license that process, and we licensed it to two people, to Goodyear and to a man down in North Carolina who was in the business of making recaps. And he could see this, and it was a good move, as an off-the-road tire for farm equipment or big equipment. In fact, he made a couple of tires for one of the machines at Dow that worked in their so-called junkyard, where they take equipment that they're junking and they break it up. And the vehicles there were always getting punctures from sharp pieces of metal or bolts or whatever, and they were out of service all the time. So we got them a set of tires that had foam in them. They didn't have any trouble. Well, I really don't know how well this has gone, but I think for off-the-road vehicles it worked out pretty good, but it never has developed for passenger cars. Although in this new projects business, we went abroad and tried to sell the idea to a couple of foreign companies to do work in Japan and in Australia. But nobody picked it up, near as I know, although it may have been happened since I've left. But, well, that was one. And then later on, we developed a process for coating materials, paper, cloth, anything, with an antimicrobial material that would be firmly fixed to the paper or to the cloth. And so maybe you've seen BioGuard socks. They're advertised by Interwoven, I believe. And really what it is the sock has an antimicrobial on it, and it tends to kill bacteria, and that keeps down athlete's foot, and it also keeps down foot odor. So that was one of the applications. Then we've put that same material on rugs, carpeting. We've put it on draperies for the operating rooms, paper drapes, paper things. So that was one of the projects that was coming out of one of the labs, and it really wasn't going, and so we decided to invest some money in getting it going. So those are the kinds of things that we were doing. So I was only in that for 4 years, basically. Maybe the things that we had success in were useful, but I'm proud of one other thing, and that was that we developed what we called tombstones. We went through and took a whole group of projects, There were about 20 of them, ideas that had been floating around the company. And we examined them, one by one by one, and we said, hey, you know, this can't work unless something else happens. So we said, okay, we're going to bury it. We're going to put a tombstone on it. We're going to say, okay, if you want to resurrect that, you've got to do this. So we did that, and people were a little astonished, I guess, because they didn't think you ever buried an idea, but we figured it was time to bury some of these, and we went on with that idea. They retained the new projects business for a time, but I think now they've done away with it, and they've put it back in each of the businesses that they have their own new projects effort. Dow went through the same phases too. They had a separate group for new ventures development, and then later on spun it back into each of the businesses separately. And I guess that's an appropriate action. At one point, they even thought that we might do some outside licensing of ideas, and so I did a little traveling with the idea. At one point, General Electric had a publication for ideas that they didn't use, and they were willing to license. And we kept good track of that. But none of those things ever seemed quite to fit with what we were doing, so we went on to develop only the things that were internal, really.
And then it was in 72
that I semi-retired, yes. The company developed a policy which I guess they took from Dow, is that anybody in a major operation will relinquish their title and their operation at age 60. Well, in 72 I was 61, but it was the first time they had developed it. So Dr. Hunter and I were the first two people to do this, to take a what you call early retirement. Really, it was sort of a semi-retirement. It wasn't retirement yet. And they still do that. A lot of people go into that stage. At 60, they relinquish their title, and then someone else can fill the job, and they are on consultancy basis. And during that period from 72 to 76, I did get involved in a patent suit that we had that had been pending for 16 years, and we finally spent a month in a courtroom over in Bay City and in Flint, between those two courtrooms, and we finally won, but the testimony was a stack of stuff about so high, because we had to educate the judge and bring him up to date and what we were doing. And funny thing was, it was back in this early stage of treating fillers, which we did after we found the high-strength rubber, and it was based on that. And this fellow had written a paper patent, basically. He figured that fillers were going to be important, and therefore he would treat them all, and that would be important. Well, he actually didn't do any work, but he just wrote paper patents, like so many people have done. We were able to show that he didn't understand the process or what was going on, and that he just claimed to understand it. So we managed to get out from under that one.
Since you retired, you've been doing some work with Saginaw Valley.
Yes.
State College.
I retired in 76. Well, let's go back one notch. Before I retired, our younger daughter decided to go to Africa to teach. She graduated from Albion College, and so she went to France first to learn French. She had 4 years of German, so she knew German well, but of course she elects to go to a country where French is the language. So she went to France for one winter in a little town outside of Lyon, and at this location they had a school that spoke only French, and they brought in potential missionaries from all over the world to learn French at that language. So she did learn French very well, but she had to be spend 9 months at it and go into the classroom in that local high school and teach mathematics, because that's what she was going to teach down in Zaire. So she finally went to Zaire in, I'd say about 73 she went into Zaire. So by Christmas of 74, we decided to go over and see her, and we flew over and spent time with her, and then took an animal tour afterwards and came home. And she came home in 76. I retired in 76. But that trip to Germany was, or to Zaire was interesting. Well, after retirement, we traveled some, and we spent some winters in Florida and one in Arizona. We didn't spend the whole winter, mostly a month. We never spent a lot of time away. And the fall of 79, Dr. Yen from Saginaw Valley called me and wanted to know if I could have breakfast with him next morning. And I said, well, sure. I went out to have breakfast with him, and it developed that they wanted me to take the interim job as dean of the School of Science and Engineering. What had happened, they'd had a College of Engineering, but science had been under arts. Arts and behavioral science, arts and sciences had been together. So they wanted to separate science and put it with engineering and form a science and engineering group. That had not happened before, and they didn't have a dean. They had a man who had headed the engineering, but he didn't have a PhD, and they wanted somebody to head this that had a PhD. So they asked me, would I do it? And I said, yes, sure. So I stepped in there full time, not knowing exactly what I was getting into, and it was pretty hectic, and because we were also looking for a new man at the same time. And by May or June of that year of 80, why, we had found a man and hired him, and I stepped out, and this other fellow took over, and I thought, that's fine. So I was governor of Rotary the year of 80-81, so I was just as glad I didn't have a job at Saginaw Valley at the same time. But then this chap that we had hired didn't work out. He got interested in venture capital things and didn't devote enough time to the job of dean. So they fired him, basically, just up and fired him one day. And I was meeting in, I guess it was April of 83 or thereabouts, and we were at a so-called Torch Club meeting. Torch Club is an organization of professional people out of Saginaw. And I was a member, and Dr. Yen said, you know, we had to fire this chap. And I said, oh, no. I said, well, you know, I'm not really excited about stepping back in, but if you really need someone, why, I'd be glad to do it. So in about a week, they called me and said, well, would you come out? So I stepped in again. Well, I had to bring order out of chaos, because he had left things hanging fire. And in fact, there were piles of paper all over the office. And as I said to Dr. Yen, my first job is to find out what's in those piles, because I don't know, there might be a time bomb in there. And I did find two. One, that we had committed ourselves to something, and I just had to say, well, there is no way we can do that. We just had to get out of it. Another one, we had committed ourselves to pay some money, and we had to pay it. So, oh boy. Well, we finally got things straightened around, and we set out on a new hiring scheme, and finally did hire a new man in the fall of 84, he stepped on board and took over. But Dr. Yin didn't want to let me go, so he kept me on for a couple of days a week for a while, and then one day a week, and I'm still on one day a week, supposedly, but this past week I was out there 2 days, so it's a variable kind of thing, but I'm doing things that they need to do, because they're in the building program out there now, a good big building program. They're building a classroom building, a library, and a science building all at one time, and it's running around $18 to $20 million, so they're going to hopefully move in April or May, and I was helping faculty pick furniture for their offices here this last week, so that was what I was doing there. But once I think they move in, I may be able to get away from that. But I've enjoyed it. It's a good school. I think they need help. Well, one of the things I did that last year, the 83-84 year, was worked on getting, and we did get, agreement from the other 15 schools. It wasn't exactly a unanimous vote, but nonetheless we did get agreement that we could put in an engineering program. We had a so-called engineering technology program up to that point. So now we have an electrical engineering degree and a mechanical engineering degree. And the work I did in 83-84 enabled us to do that. We installed the degree last fall in 84, and we did graduate in 85, our first person in that, even though we didn't have the degree for more than a year, but people had enough credits and other courses that they can get graduated.
I also understand that you have quite an expertise in mineralogy. I wanted to ask you how that developed.
That's sort of strange. Back in the late 60s, we took our younger daughter out to California for a trip. And we went to San Francisco and stayed there for a while and toured around San Francisco, then rented a car and drove down the 100-mile road to Los Angeles. Well, it's more than 100 miles, but there's a 100-mile stretch in there where you can't get off the road. And we stopped overnight at Hearst Castle, and right there was a little jade shop, and I went in there and I bought a small piece of jade, although I didn't have any equipment to work it or anything at the time. And so I got interested in jade. One thing led to another, and I finally bought equipment and more jade, and it just kept growing. And so I've made my wife a number of pieces of jewelry, and I made myself some tie tacks and cufflinks, and made gifts for some people, and I like to work with jade. It's a very nice, easy material to work with. It's what I call a forgiving material. You don't make many mistakes because you can correct them. But if you work with something soft like opal, why, you've got to be very, very careful. No, I've enjoyed that. We spent time with it. I've been giving talks on it. In fact, I gave one just last week on it, and I must have given that talk 100 times over various organizations around, women's clubs and so on. And we've visited a number of museums now. There's a good one in Chicago called the Lizadra Museum, and there's one. Well, I visited a private collector in Toledo, a man by the name of Shadell, who has a terrific collection. He's even published a book on it. And, even the Flint Institute of Art and the Detroit Institute of Art have some jade, not really extensive collections. But I really enjoy the work in it. I haven't done anything in that field now for a good many months now, really. because I've been busy with other things, mm-hmm. especially now since I started the book.
Yes, that's right. You are writing. Do you have a deadline, target date
on
the book?
No. The way it works out is this. I've got the first chapter finished, and I'm almost finished with the second chapter, and there are only 10 chapters total. The way our contract reads with Dow Corning is that once the first chapter is fully accepted, then I have a year and a half to complete it. Although they said they're not going to hold me to that, but that would be the desirable goal. I don't see too much trouble. I'm still getting a lot of input. I just got about 20 pages of stuff handwritten from a fellow that I didn't really expect to get something from, but he came through finally. And we just sent another letter to a man in England and asked him for some help. So I've written well over 120 people to get help back, and I've got quite a bit of it back. In fact, I've got to make a decision here soon about what to do about the files. I've got a two-drawer file up there that's just jammed full of stuff that I've collected. And I've even had to work a so-called spreadsheet to tell me what's in this set of files so that I know when I come up to a certain subject, I can look back and say, oh, yes, this is the one I have to go to. Because it is getting to be a little bit unwieldy, because when you get all that much input, putting it together is quite a job, even though you don't have all the task of researching everything. Although I'm still doing research now at the library at Dow Corning, because it's a big job to try and get it all down.
Has the company been supportive?
Yes, very supportive. They've supplied loaned me this computer and printer, and they've supplied paper, and I just stopped off yesterday and picked up another set of discs, because I've used 20 discs already. And you have a disc for correspondence, two discs for correspondence, a disc for notes, and disc for this, to say nothing of the program discs. So.